You're listening to the Corner House podcast. Visit the Corner House website for listings and more.
Hello and welcome to February's edition of the Corner House podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, Programme and Engagement Director here. Joining me this month is regular contributor and film reader at the University of Salford, Andy Willis. We'll kick off by reviewing Alexander Payne's new film, The Descendants, and we're also going to talk about our Oscar predictions. Later, we're going to hear from Samantha Donnelly, the artist behind our brand new exhibition, Contour States, in Galleries 2 and 3. We're also going to update you on exposures and new talent in Moving Image, which is the UK's biggest festival of student film. And also not forgetting our roundup of cultural pursuits at Corner House and beyond taking place this month. Let's start off with our film focus. We've got the lovely George Clooney in The Descendants. It's directed by Alexander Payne, who you may remember was behind the huge hit a few years ago called Sideways. Andy, tell us a little bit about this film.
Well, it's got kind of two plot strands, I think, that come together at various points across the film. One is George Clooney plays a guy whose wife is in a coma and he's having to deal with his somewhat wayward daughters without her support. And alongside that, he's also the trustee of some land in Hawaii. And him and his family have to decide whether they're going to sell it to make a load of money or whether they're going to do something more environmental with it. So those are the two main strands of the plot. It's, again, as usual, one of those films that you don't want to say too much about because it's a little bit offbeat. There are some little twists that if you give them away might spoil the kind of narrative drive of the film.
I agree. I think that Hawaii is almost a character in the film. The backdrop looks amazing. This film does look very, very visually stunning. And I like what the director did, a bit like he did with Napa Valley and Sideways. He really makes Hawaii a character, not just a kind of random location. So Sideways, there's a big expectation for Alexander's next film. Andy, did it deliver?
Well, for me, it didn't deliver that much. I found it a little bit flat. I found the two plots, there was too much of the story about the daughters, and I was more intrigued by the shenanigans and the intricate discussions that the family must have had, but which we didn't really see in the film. So I think I was someone who I think would have liked a bit more of one story than the other, but we got too much of the one I wasn't that interested in, if you like.
Well, I'm afraid I completely disagree. I really liked the family story much better. So particularly the daughters and the bits that we shouldn't mention because it might spoil the film. The daughters were amazing actresses as well. Really, really enjoyed it. I can watch George Clooney doing pretty much anything for several hours, watching him in Hawaiian shirts and a beautiful backdrop. But it's more than that. I just enjoyed that slice of life kind of feel to it. Okay, it's not kind of excitement every second, but I really just enjoyed watching some people at a really important time in their life and how the changes affect them and how they start to deal with that and readdress their lives. And the children are hilarious.
I think the critics generally are more in line with you than me. This is a rare thing, of course. Well, maybe not so rare. But I looked at the film of the year lists from the American critics, and it's on at least six or seven as the number one film of the year for those critics. And that includes some of the major American critics like Todd McCarthy, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and, of course, Roger Ebert, probably one of the most influential American critics. He had it as his film of the year. So I think the critics are lining up behind you on this one, Sarah, a little bit more than they're lining up behind me.
And I'm sure the majority of our audiences will be behind me. So do watch it and tweet or email or tell us your opinion of the film. So that's The Descendants. It's screening until at least Thursday the 9th of February. For more information, to check the times, visit our website cornerhouse.org/film. So The Descendants has already a lot of award buzz surrounding it. It is that time of year. Already picked up two Golden Globes and it's earned nominations at the Oscars and the BAFTAs. But let's have a quick look at who else is in competition for the awards. Andy, Best Picture, who's your tip?
Well, I think the Golden Globes are often seen, aren't they, as a kind of indicator of how things may go. And if you look at the list of who won, it seems all the films that people are tipping more generally seem to have picked up Golden Globes and are already picking up that awards momentum. When you look at the list for Best Picture, it seems to be all the usual suspects. You know, a number of films that we've talked about over the last year on the podcast. The Tree of Life, which, of course, I recall was one of your favourite films of the year, Sarah,
no,
last year.
They're terrible.
But also some big Corner House favourites like Midnight in Paris, and some films that I think maybe went under the radar a little bit in this country, but which seem to have really appealed to the Academy. So The Help, the film set around the civil rights movement, and the one that seems to have really gained a lot of nominations, which I felt kind of definitely went under the radar a little bit in the UK, was Hugo, the Martin Scorsese film. Now, I have a kind of soft spot for Martin Scorsese because, you know, I grew up in the 70s. I really liked his films in the 70s, but I've not liked his films as much recently, but they seem to really appeal to the Academy. And I think Hugo, with its specially designed 3D, I think, of course, you know, these people are the industry people. They want 3D to work. And I've got a feeling that maybe Hugo might be an outside bet for Best Picture because it's so clearly constructed as a film of the moment, utilising 3D to its maximum.
I think for me, Best Picture, the artist, come on, the artist. It's great, everyone enjoys it. You don't necessarily have to make in a serious political comment. It's just genius. It comes along, it blows you away, and it's got the most amazing dog in
it. But I think we have to recall that, you know, the Academy, a lot of stuffy Americans on that thing. They're not always that keen on the French. The sentiment being expressed here in the podcast is not necessarily our own, but old-fashioned Americans' views. And so I think there may be a bit of a grumble, let's have something American rather than something French, even though, obviously, everyone's talking about The Artist. It's doing phenomenally well. I think they might not go for that one. I think the Academy sometimes like more serious films. I say Hugo, maybe something, an outsider like Moneyball, baseball's, you know, quintessentially American, the film about the finances in the American baseball leagues. Maybe something like that the Academy will go for. It. Again, very old-fashioned, very worthy in a sense, the kind of film the Academy usually likes.
So, Andy, what do you think about the acting categories? Who do you want to win?
Well, I think everybody seems to have put their houses on Meryl Streep winning for The Iron Lady. Of course, not a great fan of Margaret Thatcher. I quite like Meryl Streep, but I can't say I'm her greatest fan either. I find her, she's often very mannered and a bit over the top. But this one seems to have got such momentum, it's difficult to think of anything else. I mean, if you do look at the nominees, I mean, something like somebody like Glenn Close has also had a lot of critical acclaim for Alfred Nobbs, but that film's not opened here, so that's not really something we're that familiar with. So I think it's difficult to look beyond Meryl Streep for that one.
Also, I want to give a quick nod to Janet Mateia in Albert Nobbs. Again, we've not seen the film, but she's a great British actress who's been working for many, many years, so hopefully she might get something in supporting role. And I predict Gary Oldman for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
I think, yeah, again, I'm not sure I would go with Gary Oldman for that one. Again, I think there's that the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy being a European film. I think they might go for something more conventional. I think maybe, I mean, you were saying you like The Descendants. I think maybe George Clooney in a performance I didn't rate that much, but people seem to really like it. I think the fact it's such a kind of small performance from such a big star, I think they like to pat their own on the back often, so I would think they might go for George Clooney.
Let's finish by discussing one of our favourite categories. It's the Best Foreign Language nominations. Often you've not heard of any of these films. That's because distributors take advantage of them being nominated and release them in the subsequent months after the awards. But Andy, do you have any tips or any insights into the Best Foreign Language film?
Well, again, I've not seen too many of them. I have seen an advert for a film called Bullhead, which I saw last week, which looked absolutely crazy, and that's been nominated. But again, if Meryl Streep's someone, it's difficult to look far beyond for Best Actress. I think it's difficult to look beyond A Separation. Again, we talked about A Separation last year. It was really popular with Corner House audiences, really interesting Iranian film. And I think that one would be the one that would be fully deserving of the Best Foreign Language Oscar.
I agree. It's a foregone conclusion, I think. And it did open at the end of last year in America, so about 6 months after it opened here, and went down exceptionally well critically and with audiences as well. So, yep, it's a cert.
So, yeah, any foregone conclusion and any cert with the Oscars, we know it'll be something we've never heard of.
Last month, we opened our brand new exhibition, Samantha Donnelly Contour States, in Galleries 2 and 3. Our visual arts program manager, Bren O'Callaghan, caught up with Samantha to find out more about the new work that she's made for this show.
Now, Sam, the work in the galleries, you've been on site for the past 2 weeks in a form of residency, creating all that work from scratch, from anew. And it has been described, your practice, as sculptural, primarily sculptural, assemblage. And walking through the galleries, it's not necessarily what some people might consider as sculpture initially, in that they may be thinking of carved rock or cast poured bronze, and actually you're working with a range of really, really eclectic materials, and it's really colourful, and hundreds and hundreds of different items, if not thousands, anything from photography to fabric to metal to traditionally domesticated objects and items from places like Primark and fashion buttons, lace, net, acrylic nails. So what is the significance of that material for you?
I think the materials that I use, I mean, some are personal possessions, so they're my own collection of things that I have stored in the studio in kind of an inventory style type of topology. And then other things are kind of seasonal fashion buys that I get from time to time. And there's also quite a lot of kind of hardware from like DIY shops and things like that, so that brings a harder edge to it. And then these materials are kind of weaved together. Each material obviously has a reference because it's taken from the real world. So, for example, there's some waterproof upstairs, which we've talked about, and you were talking about its relationship to marigold rubber gloves. But obviously waterproof has relationships with like cagoules and various things like that. So when you see the work, there are lots of references weaved through the materials because every material has like a chain of signifiers or a chain of references that you connect to and make them in your own mind. And there also are quite a lot of references to traditional sculpture as well through like the modelling wax that I've used, which is used for lost wax, the lost wax process. And there's also materials such as Sculpey, which is like a ceramic modelling compound. So there are kind of echoes of traditional sculpture, but maybe they're presented in a much more narrative way.
And are there any themes in the show that people might expect? Are there any topics that you find yourself returning to again and again?
You know, I'm kind of interested in how we live today. And what we choose to do as people in the UK as well. What's the, how we're steered by things like the tabloid press, how we're steered by magazines such as, you know, Glamour to Vogue to Grazia, how, you know, Twitter kind of informs that everyone's talking about this or everyone's talking about that, and then the next day it's something else. So this kind of constant shift, this constant flux, and this kind of creating our own narratives about our life and existence.
I'm also interested in the process of creating the works, because am I right in thinking that none of this was prefabricated off-site in your studio and brought in? There may have been elements that were preformed, but what could to some people seem like a chaotic assemblage is actually incredibly intentional, and if they come along and see that, they'll understand that there's purpose and meaning behind every item and every minute placement. So I'm interested in how that unfolded during the process of the 2 weeks prior to the show opening.
Elements of it were built, so all the big stuff was built, and some of the others were like sketched in like plans. And so coming to site, because it's so different to my studio space, you obviously have a lot more space to sort of play in or kind of construct in and make meaning in. And so it's a process of, you know, on day one you put things up and then you start to ask questions about it. I take a lot of photographs of the work in process, take them home, look at them on the laptop, see what's working and look at it as a flat document, and then come back in and make edits the next day, and that's like a continual process. And then obviously things have to work against each other, like the big pieces have to work against each other through the small ones. So there's this constant kind of editing and cropping, which is quite cinematic in a way.
My last question today is, I'm interested that you use the term editing there, because I understand that you have an understanding of photographic practice as well, and you seem to be using elements of that discipline, editing and cropping and airbrushing, but not in a digital fashion, but in the old-fashioned kind of analog fashion. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of where I started, and I always was very hands-on with that kind of process, like developing my own prints and negatives, etc. And so that, yeah, I suppose that kind of material concern is played out here. But I think all the pieces have a sense of time to them and a sense of presentness, but also a sense of nostalgia and memory in the same image, in a sense, which is what photography did for me as well.
So that's the highly recommended Contour States. Continues to show in our galleries until Sunday, the 25th of March. If you want to hear directly from the artist, book onto the free artist tour on Sunday, the 18th of March, which will also be BSL interpreted for hard of hearing.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast. Available to download every month from the Corner House website.
Now it's time for our What's On Guide in February. This Sunday, the 5th of February, sees the second instalment of our British Animation Awards. These are specially selected screenings of animated shorts, music videos and commercials that showcase the cream of British animation. And you get your chance to vote to help select this year's winners. Corner House digital reporter Mugabe Turya has a sneak preview of the programme and is here to tell you what to expect.
There's a really great range of animation, from puppetry to claymation to computer-generated graphics. A brilliant piece which is filmed as someone's phone. In particular, there's one that's stuck out, which was the Eagleman Stag, which was shot in like total white monochrome. It was very philosophical. It was kind of Charlie Kaufman-esque. It was definitely worth watching. Another one was the Robots in Brixton, which was quite a political piece. Kind of reminded me a little bit of the issues relating to last August, rather, riots. All in all, there are about 13 or so brilliant films that I would recommend checking out to anyone who's either a fan of animation or a fan of films generally. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing the third programme on Tuesday the 7th of Feb. Hopefully see you there.
We have another NT Live performance broadcast live to our cinema on Thursday the 9th of February. This time it's a play called Travelling Light, a new play by Nicholas Wright that's been a sellout or sold out already in London. It's a funny and fascinating tribute to the Eastern European immigrants who became big players in Hollywood's golden age. So if you recently enjoyed The Artist, this might be one for you. And if you haven't been to any of the NT Live performances, it's worth catching one. It's live theatre that's streamed into our cinema, so you get the benefit of close-ups. There's no cheap seats at the back. And here's a few of our audience members who've been impressed with the experience.
Quite a different experience to being in the theatre, but I'm pleasantly surprised, obviously, with the theatre in the round. It's an unusual experience, but I'm surprised at how many camera angles you've got.
Absolutely excellent. Don't know whether I'm in the theatre or the cinema.
I found it strange at the start because I've not experienced it before. Once I got dialed into it, I really, really enjoyed it.
I wasn't really sure what to expect with it being on a cinema screen. I was thinking it wouldn't really capture the whole sort of vibe of being in the theatre. But that feeling that you're really there is captured a lot better than I thought it would be, which has been great.
It's more like sharing an experience rather than going to the cinema, actually. And that's the amazing part.
You're really much closer to the action all the time. No seats are bad. Been in the National Theatre, I know they're up and they way up and above the stage. I know how far that is from where the action is, and I thought how lucky we are.
So that's Travelling Light, Thursday the 9th of February. Tickets are just £10 and the performance starts at 7 p.m. Whether or not a lover's in the air for you this Valentine's Day, check out our special screenings of Amelie on the 12th and 15th of February. Here's Corner House media officer Elisa Ruff to tell you why you shouldn't miss it.
Amelie is a really great film. I've already seen it a long time ago, but I never get tired of watching it. It's a film that you can enjoy again and again and again because it's very quirky, it's very unique, it's shot in a really creative way, and you sort of get to be Amelie whilst you watch the film, and her world is very unique and very different. And I think the director, Genet, has a very playful directing style, and there's a lot of tricks, a lot of humour, a lot of effects, so you never get tired of it. Amelie discovers herself as the film progresses, and you feel you're really being part of that, and I have always enjoyed that, and I really recommend to anyone who hasn't seen it yet to definitely go. It's so worth the experience. And something that we're offering because it's Valentine's Day, if you fancy a treat after watching Amelie, then pop upstairs to the cafe and you get a glass of Prosecco and a creme brulee for a special price of £6.50, which you can't really knock. But yeah, don't be put off. It's not, you know, it's a great film. It doesn't matter if you watch it as a couple, on your own, if it's Valentine's Day or not. It's always a great classic film, and I really recommend that you go and see it.
Would you like to hear real people tell real stories? Tales of Whatever is a live storytelling night, and it takes place once a month at the Castle Pub on Oldham Street. The next event is Wednesday the 15th of February, starts at 7:45 and it's totally free. So for more information, go to talesofwhatever.com or follow them on Twitter @talesofwhatever. Artist Idris Khan's new installation, The Devil's Wall, opens at the Whitworth Art Gallery on the 24th of February. This show draws inspirations from rituals and practices of the Hajj, the pilgrim to Mecca that's one of the pillars of Islam and undertaken by millions of Muslims every year. To find out more about this, check out the Whitworth Art Gallery's website. And finally, you may be, like me, looking forward to Roman Polanski's new film Carnage, which comes out this Friday. If so, make sure you don't miss Repulsion, one of Polanski's most perfectly realised films, which screens here on the 26th and 29th of February as part of Matinee Classics. Andy, tell us a little bit about Repulsion.
Repulsion is, as you say, one of Polanski's classics from the 1960s. It was released in 1965. I recently watched The Ghost, and I was watching it thinking, why has Roman Polanski got the reputation he's got? This is an absolutely dreadful film. And then if you think back, films like Repulsion really explain why he's such a revered filmmaker, why people think of him so highly. It's got a beautiful atmosphere, kind of, it's the swinging 60s, but it's not quite as swinging as some of the other films of that era would present it. It's got a lovely sort of dank atmosphere about it, I think. Catherine Deneuve plays a woman slowly going out of her mind. It's beautifully shot by Gilbert Taylor, one of Britain's greatest ever cinematographers, and it all adds up to something of a perfect package, really. And it is, again, one of those films that Matinee Classics allows us to see on the big screen, which I think makes a really big difference for a film like this.
I agree. Thank you, Andy. Later this month, we see the return of Exposure's New Talent in Moving Image, which celebrates the work of student filmmakers from across the UK. Biggest festival of its kind, and as usual, there's a packed programme of events, screenings, talks and masterclasses. Here's Corner House digital reporter Ben Monahan to guide you through.
Corner House's Exposures Film Festival showcases new talent in moving image over three exciting days and nights. Beginning on the 21st of this month, Exposures gives you the opportunity to discover new talent and network with professionals. Here's a rundown of what to expect. The first night opens with Underexposed, a short film showcase dedicated to Northwest-based filmmakers aged 14 to 18. Throughout the following 2 days, the festival really heats up as audiences are invited to view competition programmes in which the best of short films from around the country are screened and judged by you, the viewer. I spoke to festival coordinator Isabel Croissant to find out what we can expect from this year's festival entries.
Well, there's a mix. I mean, we always tend to try and program the film screenings so that they kind of show the breadth of what there is. So we have steered away from doing them in genre, you know, a documentary screening and then an artist film screening, etc. So for each screening, there's like ups and down and happy and sad film and a mix of genre, animation, drama, documentary, etc. This year, there was quite a few film around kind of death and mourning and like loss, but some of them in a very, in a actually funny way. Yes, you can be funny with this kind of thing. So you can expect quite a varied mix, but they are all really good. I was like well impressed again with the students' level of filmmaking.
Here's a sneak preview of some of this year's Exposures entries. Gavin Foden's Meet Me on the Hill.
You made it. I was beginning to think you got the wrong hill.
Nice lights.
8 speeds.
Miles Whittingham's Yesterday's Tomorrow.
I'm going to change the neural rhythm of the pineal gland in your brain. It'll take you to the day your mother died.
I asked festival coordinator Isabel why it's so important to support Exposures and its filmmakers and found out more about the Corner House's new short film commissions.
This is a screening of two short films that we as Corner House produced. They were funded by Creative England, formerly Vision Media. So we are going to screen them for the first time at Exposures and have a Q&A afterwards with some of the filmmakers and also the composer of one of the film. The first film is Hum, which is animation by two really, really talented directors called Emily Annan. And the second film is an experimental artist film called Believer, and Mark Haig, the director, will be there as well. So it's the occasion to kind of see this film for the first time.
The workshops are a big part of the Exposures Festival.
Yeah.
What do you think they bring?
The workshop and all the events are more there, obviously, for people who want to learn more about working in the moving image or the TV and film industry. So we've got several things. It ranges from a masterclass with really a famous and important cinematographer who did two films this year, Submarine and Tyrannosaur.
My name is Oliver Tate. I suppose it's a bit of an affectation, but sometimes I wish there was a film crew following my every move.
You can't stay here. You've no business with me. I'm not a nice human being.
I feel safe with you.
Nobody's safe with me.
We've also got specific workshops. So, for instance, we're doing one with the BBC Writers' Room, which is obviously more of interest to people who are studying or want to go into script writing and want to know how to send a script to the BBC, what happens, what do they do with it, what they like, what they don't, all this kind of things.
Another workshop highlight on offer during the festival is CoFilmic's Final Cut, a practical session of editing and script writing for comedy. I spoke to managing director of CoFilmic, Janet Harrison.
I set up CoFilmic about a year and a half ago now, and essentially it's a comedy short film festival. Quite different from the run-of-the-mill film festivals in that we include people who want to make comedy for television, and also live comedy acts, mainly sort of sketch acts and sort of character actors. The whole ethos about what we're trying to do really is to get filmmakers to collaborate with writers and performers. Anybody who has an interest in comedy really has got a story to tell. And I think what we did find is that when we opened the submissions, that we had a lot of very, very funny sketches that came in, which weren't always the best in terms of production values. But we also had some beautiful looking films, which weren't particularly funny. So
that was hard work.
I think, well, you know, it was interesting, and I think what we're trying to do is link those different people together, and I think we can create something very, very different, something unique, which will definitely have a sort of a brand, if you like, of comedy, which is coming out of Manchester. So it's exciting. And I think in terms of the event that we're doing, I think there's a lot of talent here in Manchester and the surrounding areas. You know, it's, you know, the Northwest is obviously has a rich heritage of comedy.
Also guest lecturing during the CoFilmic session at Exposures Festival is script consultant and former executive producer at the BBC, Michael Jacob, who gave us a taster of his pearls of wisdom for comedy writing.
I think the important thing with any sort of comedy, however long it is that it's got to be about characters that an audience can have empathy with in a story that the audience wants to follow. And it can be like a 2-minute story or a 30-minute story or a feature film. Just going straight for jokes never works unless they are true to the character you're writing about.
Does the character always come first?
I think different writers approach it in different ways. Some people like think of a setting. Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong got a show called Fresh Meat that's obviously set here. And sometimes you can think, oh, here's a bloke, he's just been made redundant, he hates life, he's miserable, which was one foot in the grave. So you approach it from the character and then put them in a setting.
And in terms of the type of people you think might get a lot out of this, do you think it's people who have to already have a bit of experience, or can they be completely amateur and just have an interest in editing and writing for film?
Yes, I think, you know, everybody needs to keep the basics in mind all the time. So it should be helpful to everybody, really, that wants to tell funny stories. But if people are funny and can write, then they can learn skills and techniques. In terms of writing, you have to feel passionate about it and write what you feel you want to write rather than something that you think will sell. You have to be aware of the market, obviously, but write from your heart, I think, and put yourself into your work.
A fine example of the wise words on offer at this year's festival, with an exciting batch of films created by the UK's newest talents also on offer, this year's Exposures looks set to be better than ever.
So that's Exposures. It takes place between the 21st and 23rd of February here at Corner House. For more information on the festival, follow at Exposures UK on Twitter, join the Exposures Facebook group, or visit exposuresfestival.co.uk. So that's all for this month's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Next month we'll have a distinctly Spanish flavour as we celebrate our Viva Spanish and Latin American Film Festival. And if you want to find out more about anything that we've talked about, visit cornerhouse.org.
You've been listening to the Cornerhouse podcast. Visit the Cornerhouse website for listings and more.